Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Snowies Camping Show. Today, campsite Q&As, episode number 5 in terms of Q&A episodes. Number 5.
That won't confuse anyone.
It won't confuse a single person.
It's more like episode 90.
91, I think.
Is the plan. Hopefully that lines up when it's published.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Before we get into the juice of it, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcast, be that through YouTube or your podcast app, and also our Facebook group, the Snowies Camping Group. On just type in Snowies Camping, it'll pop up. You'll see it with the podcast logo potentially or something along those lines.
We keep talking about a name change, but it keeps getting put in the back burner.
So we just have to just put that little clause in just in case, because we don't know exactly when it will change in relation to when these episodes go live.
So it's the only Facebook group with the Snowies logo next to it, unless someone's created a fraud one, in which case it's not us.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not rant on.
The last time we did a Q&A episode was in July, I just realised.
6 months ago.
So a really long time. So, you know, if you're listening to this sometime in the distant future, it's currently February of the following year. Oh, shivers. No, it's not. It's January. I'm pushing the year away already. We're currently in January. This episode will go live in February.
It's actually February today.
Okay.
It's the 1st of February today.
All right. Just if you're listening, pretend that we're starting afresh from now. So
we'll put a little clause at the start. If you want to skip all the nonsense, just go to whatever part of the video, because we're trying to work out where we are and what day it is.
So if you've already listened to a couple of episodes this season, you would know that we've got a bit of a new format on our non-interview episodes when it's just Benji and I. And we're talking a bit about new gear at the beginning of the episode, and then we've got a funny story at the end of the episode. But new gear.
So we mentioned the Picos, I think, in a recent episode as an awesome inflatable canvas swag, compact.
Super compact and lightweight, yeah.
So as part of that range, Dometic, who make the Pico, Dometic that do the popular fridges, have got a range of inflatable tents, which are pretty cool, called Santorini. I'm assuming that's how you say it properly, and just as it's spelt, which as far as I'm aware, I haven't actually, we'll be doing videos on them.
We will. Yep.
But from what I gather, it's the same kind of, we say lightweight canvas. Canvas isn't lightweight, it's heavyweight, and compared to a lot of other tent fabrics, but it's made of canvas, and it's got an inflatable frame with what look like quite upright walls and a bunch of accessories to go with
it. Visually, they look a bit like those traditional canvas heavy steel pole cabin style tents. Cabin's they have a one, bit of that vibe, but they're obviously a lot more compact and lightweight being air poles, which is cool.
Yeah, those old ones were heavy. So much steel in there. So they're pretty awesome.
And we've got some BioLite base charge, which is, I think, is that the first time we've seen something like that from BioLite? Like for on our end of things anyway, in terms of they're a power station and they come in a couple of different sizes. I think 600 and a, 1500?
Well, they call it 1500, but it's 1200 watt. I think it is. I haven't seen any big power packs from BioLite. Sorry. They've made compact portable USB, and I guess you could call them large USB power packs, but not a large like car battery alternative sort of power pack. So these ones are pretty cool. I did a video on the 1500. Mm-hmm. Really intuitive to use. Really simple sort of buttons on the front. It's not overly complex.
Yeah.
And just a really neat, well thought out design. It gives you lots of information on the display. Mm-hmm. BioLite's an awesome company. Involved in a lot of sort of works around the world with
third world countries and electricity and light and cooking and power supply and stuff.
So there's a lot of good cause behind their brand. Mm-hmm. But these are pretty cool. Now, they're not cheap. They're an expensive item. But I think the expense is reflected in how easy they are to use.
Yeah.
And it's early days, but you would hope it also reflects the quality of the battery and the lifetime of the product if it's well looked after.
And they do a larger panel as well that sort of links up with those now too.
Yeah, you do kind of end up, as with a lot of these brands, you kind of almost end up in their ecosystem.
Yeah.
The plugs and stuff all kind of work together.
Yeah.
And to use an alternative panel with this means you need to mess around with adapters and that sort of thing. But it's pretty awesome. Check it out. It's on the website now.
Last but not least, we just got a couple of new hardcore knickknacks, which I really love because obviously doing the van and having a partner who's an electrician, all that sort of jazz, a lot of that power stuff we do ourselves. And anytime there's little bits and bobs that come up in that DIY power circuit system thing.
Mm.
I just love scoping them out.
I like hardcore.
Yeah, me too.
It's got such a range of stuff, and when I bring it out, it seems to be really well thought out and
it's neat products. It's very accessible as well, and that's what I love about it. It's like it's pretty much targeted at every camper to be able to purchase, and it's not outlandish costs, but what you get for what you're getting for what you're paying for example, it's great value.
It's also on the flip side of that BioLite, being caught up in the BioLite ecosystem, hardcore don't do that as such. You generally
they're pretty universal.
Anderson plugs, cigarette lighter plugs, those sort of things. There's no sort of hardcore specific wire or adapter that you need.
But something that does need to be highlighted is that we now do hardcore DC to DC chargers. Mm. We haven't done DC to DC chargers before, and there's something that I constantly asked about, because for people that have the new alternators, basically they're a requirement for running or charging any sort of portable power pack or 12-volt battery in the back of your car and things like that.
It also gives a better charge from solar.
Definitely.
Better charge to your battery from your car. Yeah. And you can, I think, pretty sure, quote me if I'm wrong, but it also enables you to use different battery chemistries within the system, I think.
I think it can, depending on the actual charger's capabilities.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but they're pretty neat. And those power distribution boxes are pretty cool.
They're pretty cool.
They're like really well thought out. We've had one from a – can't think of the brand, Power something.
Power Tech,
that's the one. Mm. So they're something that you could make yourself, but they're just really neatly thought out with a voltmeter and a heap of USB plugs and quick charge USB plugs.
USB, I think there's USB-C in there as well, 12-volt outlet, it's just good little switches.
Yeah, so check them out. All on the website now.
Right, let's launch into the questions.
So shall I go first?
Yeah,
given
sure.
Given it's Ben from the Facebook group. So we put these questions out on a few channels through our, Facebook and YouTube.
Yep.
So Ben from the Facebook group asks, I've heard you guys mention scouting a few times. I'm wondering, did you guys grow up in scouting? What kickstarted your love of the outdoors? Are you guys still in or connected to scouting? Yes, I was in scouting when I grew up. Did Cub Scouts and Venturers. In Adelaide Hills here and at the Strathalbyn Scout Group. I don't know what kickstarted my love in the outdoors. Probably scouting drove it. I mean, we camped a bit as a family when we were young. It was basic holidays where we'd go camp and fish, and wasn't any flash holidays that we went on, but that probably drove the love of it. And I had a really good group of friends within Scouts that I learned heaps in Scouts. It was a little kind of family outside of my family. And I am still connected. My oldest daughter goes to a scout group here in Adelaide. It's different now than it was back then. There's a lot more red tape and requirements in the badge systems. So different. But I'm glad that it's still alive and well. I'm still trying to stay part of the group, but my daughter's moved to high school this year and she's so busy.
Different
I don't know
priorities.
If she can keep going, but I do like to. I have always been connected in some way to scouting. Yeah. How about you?
I didn't do scouting, no, but I did actually do army cadets, which is interesting because anybody who knows me now knows that I have a healthy dose of skepticism or whatever it's called for authority. It's not generally
my
vibe.
Yeah, I can't see
you there. Yeah. But through that we did heaps of sort of jamboree style things and lots of out in the bush survival based stuff. Probably a bit more survival based than scouts in the sense that, you know, obviously being army or military is self-sufficiency sort of based stuff, which I really, really loved. But that was sort of more in my early teenage years for a couple of years. And before that, ever since I was three, we've been camping, but real off-grid camping, like middle of the bush, outback stations, New South Wales, family, friends, country family who've been doing that sort of stuff the whole life. And, you know, I've got photos of me when I was literally three or four and barely walking, just swinging on giant ropes out over the river in my undies and stuff. So it's like, I think, I think maybe like a lot of people growing up, if your family didn't have a huge amount of money or time, camping was just
easy.
How easy and how you could just get away. And so, you know, I'm not being like, just in case my parents are listening, I'm not like, we were so poor, because that's not what I'm saying at all. It's just more that that style of holiday and adventuring is a lot more accessible for people who don't have buckets of money to throw at Gold Coast holidays or cruises or, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm just saying, much more accessible. Not, it wasn't as busy back then as well. Like nowadays there's more people camping, which is a good thing, but it means that campsites are fuller and there's more money involved in going to those places. But
like I remember as a kid, we used to go camping in my dad's yellow Kingswood, mustard yellow, massive Kingswood. Nice. And we'd sleep in like one of those Legionnaire tents, which is, you know, the thing, I don't know what they call them these days, with like a single pole, triangle with a single pole
like
in the middle.
Traditional, like if you were to draw a picture of a tent, you'd draw a Legionnaire's tent.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got a short vertical wall around the sides.
And we didn't have mattresses. We just had like thin yoga mats with sheepskins because obviously dad's from the farm and they had a heap of sheep. And that's just what we slept on, you know, just stuff like that.
That's cool.
And so,
cool.
Yeah.
Next question. I'm going to let you do this one because I think you've done some research behind this.
Yeah. So Brad from YouTube. Hi, Brad. He has asked us, I have two 120 watt and one 200 watt solar panels. Do I need three MPPT controllers or three charge regulators, basically, or solar controllers, as in one for each panel, or can I feed the two 120s through one and get a separate one for the 200 watt? Well, no, you don't need three. There's one thing to mention. I'm not aware of any 12 volt power circuit that allows you to have two solar charge controllers or charge regulators. Connected to the battery. Because the purpose of that is obviously to take feedback and readings from the battery to regulate what it's putting through from the solar panels. And if you've got two trying to do that from the battery, it just doesn't work.
Yep. That makes sense.
And I mean, I'm happy to be wrong, but that's in terms of my understanding there.
Well, this would be interesting to see if anyone's got other thoughts on this, because this is based on our feedback. Yeah.
So majority of camping solar panels will usually sit within that 18 to 20 volt range, right? So I would say for the most part, as long as your panels are within a similar voltage range, there is absolutely no reason why you can't connect all three of your panels together in parallel and put them through one charge controller or MPPT controller to your battery. There's a couple of considerations. One being that you will obviously have two 120 watt panels and your 200 watt panel. Realistically, the voltage is going to be limited by the lowest voltage of those three panels in the chain.
Right.
So like if you have one that's 19 and two that are 20, then the voltage that's coming through will be 19 volts. The other thing to consider is that if your 200 watt panels put out, say on average, I think 120 is around 7 or 8 amps and the 200 is around 11 amps, that means you've got what, quick math, 19, 27 amps. So you just need to make sure that the MPPT or any whatever charge regulator you're using has a capacity of say 30 amps or a capacity that's rated more than the total amps that you should be getting out of your panels.
And that's panels connected in parallel, which means like they're kind of like piggybacked in a way.
Yeah,
not,
basically
not all just wired into the one spot. They're kind of in a row. And then that last one is connected to the MPPT controller, which is then connected to the battery.
Correct. So if you're using like solar blankets, which I'm assuming that Brad might be, he might not be, but I'm assuming he's talking like maybe companion or hardcore type panels, they should all just come with an Anderson connection and you can all just click them all together.
Yep.
And then run them through your MPPT.
Add a one into another.
Yeah.
And then the last one to the MPPT controller. Yep. But keen to hear, usually these sort of questions pull out the 12 volt nerds or geeks, and we certainly love to hear other people's feedback or setups on workarounds or what doesn't work for their.
It's
them.
Possible that the 200 watt may potentially be throttled by the current output of the other two, but I don't think it will be. I think the amps will add up and the voltage is what will be limited from those three panels.
I wonder if it's a difference in the order in which you set them up.
No, I don't
know if that makes
a
difference.
I don't think it does.
Haven't tried it, but that's our research.
So. Yeah.
Now, Kate from the Facebook group as well, my question is more a theme. When, indeed, if ever, is the right time to move from a tent to a trailer, etc.? It seems like an inevitable trajectory for many families, trajectory many families are on. And I watch and wonder how they make those decisions, especially noting cost, change in dynamic of the experience, etc. Surely this is a camping equivalent of keeping up with the Joneses.
That's a very interesting question.
It is, yeah.
And I think it's cool that it's been asked. For me, 100%, you know, Kate mentions the cost and the dynamic, changing dynamic of the experience and all that sort of jazz. And 100% agree with that because, you know, a lot of the time if you're looking at a caravan or a camper trailer, and I mean, I was just looking at some came across my radar the other day and I sussed them out. Not that that's in my, I'm not interested in getting one, but you know, if you're getting one new, it's like 50 grand plus. And some caravans I've seen are like a couple of hundred grand and it's absolutely insane. And there's no way that that is even remotely close to achievable for me or anything that I would even consider. So cost is massive, but I think ultimately what it comes down to is how accessible your camping setup makes camping for you.
Yep.
And I think a lot of families are potentially moving towards that because potentially they, you know, you have your mum and your dad and one of those in your partnership isn't as into camping as another or one of them wants more creature comforts and things like that. And so you're looking for a solution that means that both parents are going to be as equally happy to go on those kind of holidays.
Yep.
And I think the other thing sometimes with kids comes down to especially if you've got a bunch of little kids or you've got lots of kids, how easy, you know, maintaining food and water and bathing and getting them to bed and all that sort of stuff is.
Yep.
For me, my kids have grown up without a huge, not structure. I was going to say without a huge amount of structure. That's not true. But in terms of, we've grown up with camping and I've grown up with camping. And so the idea of maybe not get washing for a couple of days or having, you know, just washing your armpits and your face or, you know, eating a can of soup or that real rough and ready camping experience is part of the charm for us.
Yeah.
So we don't need a camping setup that allows us to live close to how we do at home.
Mm-hmm.
But some other people might.
Yep. So I agree with that. I think there is a little bit of like Kate said, keeping up with the Joneses too. New people think I need a camper trailer. Maybe, but consider everything that you've said there and also consider for me, like I can see if I had a camper trailer, certainly there'd be elements of camper that you go, wow, this is really easy and comfortable. But to have that element of ease and comfort, I've got to store that trailer. I've got to spend the money, as you mentioned, on that trailer and register it and upkeep it.
Extra and tires.
And I've got to tow that trailer with me wherever I go
as
well.
And you need
a
vehicle that's big enough to do that.
That's right. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they're all considerations. So I don't think there's a right – maybe the right time is like how – exactly what you said. How important is that? And is there an element of what we've currently got that's holding us back from doing what we want? And is, I mean, Kate mentions a trailer. If it's just a trailer in terms of ease of packing, like a box trailer so you can easily pack your stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefits to that because it's easier to pack a trailer than trying to fit it all like a jigsaw in your car.
That's right.
And it distributes the weight and makes it safer to travel in as well.
Yeah. Well, I have friends that tent camp, but they're a large family. So they actually do have a box trailer that sits in their shed and all of their camping gear's in there. So even though it's not a caravan or a camper, they can just hook up their car and go.
It's easy, yeah, which makes packing less daunting as well. So,
but, you know, we've got Jake who works up here with us in our web team marketing team. He's always been
He's like alpine super lightweight.
Alpine lightweight, bike packing.
Yep.
He's got a couple of young kids now and a partner. And for the first time in his life, he's looking at investing in a small pop-top caravan, which he would have never considered himself doing. But he's doing that because he recognizes the needs of his partner in terms of her being able to enjoy the experience.
Yep.
And that's what's more important.
Yeah.
But I also do get that vibe of, you know, if you're setting up in a campground and you're sitting there with your tent and your chairs and your table and whatever, and then a big rig rolls in and their camping setup just seems so lush and so much more advanced than yours. But I think there is that element of maybe feeling like there are tiers of, you know, maybe elitism in camping or whatever, but Who cares about that? You just do what works for you. Don't worry about other people.
Yeah, I look at the simple setups and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I'm a bit the same.
So no right time, Kate. Whatever's right for you, I think, to make getting out there easy.
Yeah.
And if you can afford it, I suppose, is the main thing.
Correct.
Your turn.
Beth from – oh, yeah, this question came through via Q&As on our website. So we have a place on our website where people can ask questions about products and all that sort of jazz.
On our product pages, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so Beth's asked this on one of the mattresses that I was looking at. So obviously she's part of the Facebook group, because in the Facebook group recently I just asked people's thoughts and opinions of bedding setups and stretchers and mattresses and whatever, because I need to upgrade. So Beth's asked, Lauren, did you end up deciding what to upgrade your kids' bedding systems with? And I have. I'm going to go with XPED's Versa mat, a 5R Versa mat. It's essentially, it's not self-inflating, but it is insulated and you can inflate it within a minute. It's got its integrated pump. It's long baffles. It's like 10 centimeters thick, super comfy, but it packs down like smaller than a soccer ball, basically.
It's almost – you could use it for hiking. It's probably a heavyweight hiking mat.
I think the Versa is a heavyweight hiking mat. They do an ultralight version and they do ones with more insulation, but that's what I'm going with, and I'm considering coupling it with a stretcher, like a super lightweight, low to the ground, packable stretcher, but I want to investigate some more options out there.
Like the Helinox one, which is quite expensive.
The Helinox one, which I'm not going to get because I can't afford four of those for my children. Yeah, but something sort of along those lines. Even Zempire do a double U leg stretcher, but I need to check that out more in person.
It's a bit of mucking around setting them up.
And there was some great points made in that discussion in the group as well about if you do go with a stretcher, consider your setup time. You know, if you're moving where you're camping somewhere different every single night, is that something you want to set up? So there's heaps of different things to consider. But for us, definitely those Versa mats are the ones that I'm going with.
Once again, there's no right way to do it. It's what suits the individual.
Correct.
Now, Lynette, who's a regular on our Facebook group, has fired us – I think she fired us a few more questions, but
she gave us a whole bunch of ideas and thoughts that she had on the podcast, which is great. But these were the two questions that I teased out of it.
So what – camping gear is currently on trend and what is being phased out due to lack of popular demand. Now, I don't have anything immediate in terms of what's on trend. In terms of phasing out, I did think recently that those, the Speedy Black Hole tents, and there was the Oztent Malamu tents, those kind of pop-up ones.
They went through a bit of a rage, didn't they?
They were really popular, but I don't – I could be wrong, and I'm only going by questions people ask or conversations that occur, not have much around them recently. Yeah. So they seem to be maybe – on the way out.
Possibly, yeah. Because I think in practice in theory they're a great idea, but in practice they're a bit less of a great idea because they can be quite awkward to put them back in the bag. They're like a pop-up tent basically, but not like an instant up, a pop-up in the sense that you pull them out the bag and you throw them and they
literally
sort of spring up.
Like the ultimate pop-up kind of thing.
Yeah, like those shower tents that you see people wrestle with on the side.
Spring-loaded frame.
Yeah, basically.
But that's not very good in the wind. Like they're kind of a two-season tent really.
They're not super strong. They'll keep you dry.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes if those poles break, you can't fix them. So I think to a certain extent, or you can, but it's a DIY solution and it takes a bit. So I think potentially they're phased out now because the theory was so great, but now we're a couple of years down the track and the reality is not so great.
Yeah.
But I still know people who love them.
In terms of what's on trend, I think –
other thing of phasing out, which I think everybody's probably paid attention to now, is dome tents just don't exist anymore.
I don't know why
because
you can't go wrong.
They're so great. You cannot go wrong with a dome tent. You literally cannot go wrong with a dome tent.
I've got one in my shed that I use as if I've got a family coming along who don't have a tent. It's like, that's fine. I've got a 4-person dome tent. It'll suit. It's fine for you after. It's easy to put up. They can work it out themselves.
Yep.
It's got three poles. Cross pole on
the
main section.
The thing I love about them is if your pole breaks, you just get a replacement pole kit and just fix them. They're like endlessly fixable.
Yeah, not complex, but I think it's the livability, all the features and functions and the marketing around the other stuff, which does make it good and livable and lots of really cool things. But dome tents are ultimately affordable and easy to set up and solid in the weather.
One thing that I do think potentially in not too long a time will start to be phased out, and this might be a really big call to make, but is just framed things in general.
Like
I think air poles and inflatable things are just becoming more and more prevalent, and more brands are getting into, like, Darchi do one, OzTent do one. Like, there's so many brands out there that are moving into this area, and I'm just wondering how much longer people will be investing in framed tents.
I think you're right. It's probably you pulled the one thing out that I didn't think of, which is what is on trend. I was going to say renewable products or recycled products. We're seeing in a few things and a bit of a move towards more lightweight stuff.
Yeah. But
I think air poles is probably the big trend that we're seeing. There was probably maybe 3-4 years ago that we sort of first saw them come out, and there was a lot of skepticism.
Yeah.
Around, my tent's going to go flat. You know, that's no good. But if you think about it, if your tent goes flat, you get a hole, your tent falls down. But all that's damaged is the frame, and you can fix that, replace the ladder. If you've got a steel pole tent or even a fiberglass pole tent, the tent pole breaks.
Could tear through your fabric.
It's also torn the fabric. Yeah. So you've got to repair the pole and the fabric. So,
and also air tent frames aren't usually a whole single frame, is all inflatable sections, in one go. So we're in sections. So if one bit goes down, it's not like the whole thing's going to fall on you.
And they're now made with TPU materials. The technology is getting better. They're in layers and layers of protective material around the top of it, and they're tested well within excess of what you actually need to inflate the products up.
I think at this stage, the limiting factor, or so far the limiting factor, has been the weight, because they do tend to be a fair bit heavier. But I'm wondering if, especially with like the Dometic Santorinis, for example, that we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, that are using more lightweight fabrics. I'm wondering if now that inflatable has been established as a legitimate design, the next phase of inflatable camping gear is going to be trying to cut down on that bulk and weight.
Well, I think we're already seeing less protective layers over the frames as we've become more confident in the material that the actual frame bladders are made of. I know the Santorini, I think, just had one or two layers, but from memory, I reckon the early Black Wolf or even the Outdoor Connection ones off the top of my head, they'd have like 3 or 4 layers over the top of the pole to give it protection, which is a lot of bulk over the entire frame.
Yeah.
Now moving on, the second question Lynette has, and I don't really have much feedback on this, but suction or magnetic clip-on awnings any good? Pros and cons. I mean, I guess they are good for lightweight campers like Lynette, who we know camps out of
a little car, Camry maybe?
Or a Camry or something like that. Yeah, she camps out of a sedan. Yep. So big focus on small, compact, whatever fits in her sedan. So I imagine a suction or magnetic clip-on awning would be quite compact. I guess my thoughts are, how reliable are those suction caps? Because there's suction caps, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They all tend to pop off after a while in the hot weather, or even if they get too cold, they don't stay flexible enough and stay on, so it might
That's a really good a point, like variance in temperature and stuff like that.
So I'd say they're useful, but I don't know if I'd rely upon them in heavy weather. But I don't have any experience with them.
Similarly to you, I don't have a huge amount of experience with them, but it would be just, you know, thinking about it on paper, there would be some obvious limitations to them that don't exist with proper like bolt-on awnings and things like that. I'd say that if you are aware of the limitations and you can take into consideration what they are, then they're probably a good option, in the sense that, you know, if you're having really poor weather, it's going to be super windy, take them down, or, you know, just use them for fair weather and, you know, just use them for shade. Like, I'm imagining if it's raining heavily and the material gets wet or it's starting to pull, the suction caps or the magnets aren't going to be strong enough in that sort of situation. So they're probably just designed to be quite lightweight, quite compact, fair weather, providing a bit of shade, nothing too crazy.
I know another regular person in our Facebook group, which I think we've mentioned in the show before as well, but Coralie, she shared a picture of
a Fiesta DIY awning.
And I've got one of those Fiesta beach shelters, and it's a flexible kind of lycra type material.
Yeah, it's stretchy.
And she's just used some of those big you can for the hardware shop, like those big claw clamps.
Yeah.
And just clamped it to the gutter of her, I think it's a high-ass van that she's got, and then just used the poles and set it up like that. So
brilliant.
I mean, I realized I carried a tarp and a Fiesta shelter for my entire trip. And then I saw that photo and I went, probably could have done without one of them.
Yeah.
Because I was doing the same thing with the tarp, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah.
But that was, I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah, yep. Genius idea.
Last question.
Before last question.
Funny story. We didn't mention our funny story at the start.
Yeah, I think I did.
If you're still here with us. Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I did. All right. Joni from Facebook has asked, a removable kitchen in a four-wheel drive boot. I'd like to do this for camping to reduce the setup time as we have a tent, but take it all out when not camping. Is there such a thing? I don't know if there is such a thing.
I'm sure you could get someone to make something.
You could get someone to make something, or you could actually, what are they called? They're called, I've seen them heaps on Pinterest because obviously I cruise Pinterest all the time because I love ideas that come up on there. It's called something like there's an actual name for it and there's plans for how to make them. So if you're handy in any way, shape or form, it would be so cool to look into one of these. But they're essentially made out of plywood and they're like a little, when it's all folded up and it's a cupboard, but it also includes legs. So you can pull it out of the back of your car.
Oh, I think I have seen
and
these.
The legs swing down and you sort of open up the cupboards and it becomes this big kitchen, but then it all just folds back in on itself. Yep. So something like that might be cool. I know things like Drifter Kitchens, which people would most commonly know, they might have a super compact option that would suit similarly. But having just built a pull-out kitchen for the back of our Sprinter van, and that wasn't too daunting and it was sort of quite fun, I would say don't be afraid of maybe giving a go at putting something together that works for you and doing that yourself. I mean, obviously you also have the classic couple of plastic tubs, you know, that you just get a fully packed. We've got an episode on that somewhere. It's just fully packed and ready to go. You just whip it out and shake your chunk. But that does also require some form of setting up. And I think Joni's sort of talking more about a contained all-in-one kitchen type thing.
I reckon just consider that it's probably going to be a heavy thing to take in and out of the car.
Definitely.
And once that's in the car, have a think about what else you need to put in there as well, because it'll probably take up a lot more space than tubs. Maybe a better option would be to have drawers in your car so you can pull out a drawer and there's a lot of them that might have a table attached to that folds out on the end of the drawer so you've got your accessories in the drawer. Look, to answer your question, to more to the point, Joni, I'd say there's nothing we know of that's specifically available. Certainly ways to build your own and probably companies that could build it. It's all probably restricted by your budget, how much you're willing to cart in and out of the car and how much space you're willing to give up in the back of the car for just your kitchen setup.
Yep. And I guess it would also depend, removable kitchen, exactly what that means to you. Because for some people that might include plates and cutlery storage and, you know, condiments and all the basics. And for some people that might just be a stove and a saucepan and some cooking utensils.
Yep.
So, you know, you could get something like, I know 23-0 do them. They're like kitchen slings.
Just fold it out,
and they roll up and you can often roll them up still fully packed with stuff. So, you know, you could possibly even look at something that's a lot smaller that only has a couple of kitchen things, but then you've got, you know, your fabric rolls full of the extra kitchen stuff that would be super easy to pull out as well.
Yeah, think about how easy it is to set up, not necessarily attached to the car. It goes in the car easy, but it's easier to set up outside of my tent under my awning or whatever.
Cool.
Yeah, good one.
Right.
Funny story time. This is a pretty quick one and it's probably only really going to do it justice if hopefully we're relying entirely on Kira and our editor to be able to put the footage in the video.
If you're somebody who's watching it, otherwise we'll have a link of where you can watch it in our show notes.
Anyone listening is just kind of going to go, oh, it sounds like it would have been good to watch, but thanks, I can't see it while I'm driving my car.
Yeah, totally.
But a kangaroo's fighting.
At a campsite.
At a campsite, that's it. That's our whole story. Bronnie, who works with us upstairs, she does all that imaging, editing. Image editing.
Image editing,
Shared a video that she found. It was on a news channel or something.
Somewhere. She saw it on the news, I think. So some people maybe have seen this and by the time this goes live, you're probably like, guys, that was a couple of weeks ago, old news. But, it was a couple of massive roos having a a mad punch up in a campground, and they just took it straight through someone's tent.
And it was a Coleman Instant Up tent.
I think 10p North Star it looked
which
like.
Stayed standing. They just kind of went into the side.
They just ripped the whole corner down. But I couldn't believe it because they literally hit that tent and they were really only on the tent for a couple of seconds before they were up again. Yeah. But the tent was shredded.
On the corner.
It was on the whole corner. It was just hanging in shreds. And I was just like, holy moly.
Yeah.
Insane crazy. Damage, but quite funny. Anyway,
check out the footage. If you're listening.
Classic, Australian, iconic.
Jump back in later. And the only better one is that, have you seen that bloke who punched the kangaroo?
Yeah.
That was even better footage.
Sorry if that offends some people, but that was also quintessential was cool. Australian. I love it.
Full on boxing
there's another
kangaroo.
One where we're getting on it. We're really getting out of control here, but there's another one I've seen with a kangaroo who chases a poor old fella. Like obviously he's taking his dog for a walk in the bush or whatever. And it's like a little fluffy Maltese. Yeah. And you see on security footage like a kangaroo comes bounding out after him and they have this full-on punch up and the poor guy's just trying to save himself and then the kangaroo falls over and he just like jumps on the kangaroo and just sits on it and lays on it and the kangaroo can't move.
I haven't seen
oh
that.
Man awesome. Crack up anyway.
Anyway, that's us done. I think we're out of time.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us and we'll see you again next Monday.
See you later.